The Synthesis of Yoga. Sri Aurobindo. The Yoga of Self-Perfection, Part 4. Chapter 19. The Nature of the Supermind. Page 783. The object of yoga is to raise the human being from the consciousness of the ordinary mind subject to the control of vital and material nature, and limited wholly by birth and death and time and the needs and desires of the mind, life, and body, to the consciousness of the spirit free in itself, and using the circumstances of mind, life, and body as admitted or self-chosen, and self-figuring determinations of the spirit, using them in a free self-knowledge, a free will and power of being, a free delight of being. This is the essential difference between the ordinary mortal mind in which we live and the spiritual consciousness of our divine and immortal being, which is the highest result of yoga. It is a radical conversion as great as and greater than the change which we suppose evolutionary nature to have made in its transition from the vital animal to the fully mentalized human consciousness. The animal has the conscious vital mind, but whatever beginnings there are in it of anything higher are only a primary glimpse, a crude hint of the intelligence, which in man becomes the splendor of the mental understanding, will, emotion, aesthesis, and reason. Man, elevated in the heights and deepened by the intensities of the mind, becomes aware of something great and divine in himself, towards which all this tends. Something he is in possibility, but which he has not yet become. And he turns the powers of his mind, his power of knowledge, his power of will, his power of emotion and aesthesis, to seek out this, to seize and comprehend all that it may be, to become it, and to exist wholly in its greater consciousness, delight, being, and power of highest becoming. But what he gets of this higher state in his normal mind is only an intimation, a primary glimpse, a crude hint of the splendor, the light, the glory, and divinity of the spirit within him. A complete conversion of all the parts of his being into molds and instruments of the spiritual consciousness is demanded of him before he can make quite real, constant, present to himself this greater thing that he can be, and entirely live in what is now to him at the best a luminous aspiration. He must seek to develop and grow altogether into a greater divine consciousness by an integral yoga. The yoga of perfection necessary to this change has, so far as we have been considering it, consisted in a preparatory purification of the mental, vital, and physical nature, a liberation from the knots of the lower prakriti, a consequent replacement of the egoistic state, always subject to the ignorant and troubled action of the desire soul, by a large and luminous static equality which quiets the reason, the emotional mind, the life mind, and the physical nature, and brings into us the peace and freedom of the spirit, and a dynamical substitution of the action of the supreme and universal divine Shakti under the control of the Ishwara for that of the lower Prakriti. An action whose complete operation must be preceded by the perfection of the natural instruments. And all these things together, though not as yet the whole yoga, constitute already a much greater than the present normal consciousness, spiritual in its basis, and moved by a greater light, power, and bliss, and it might be easy to rest satisfied with so much accomplished, and think that all has been done that was needed for the divine conversion. A momentous question, however, arises as light grows. The question, through what medium is the divine Shakti to act in the human being? Is it to be always through the mind only, and on the mind plane, or in some greater supramental formulation, which is more proper to a divine action, and which will take up and replace the mental functions? If the mind is to be always the instrument, then although we shall be conscious of a diviner power initiating and conducting all our inner and outer human action, yet it will have to formulate its knowledge, will, Ananda, and all things else in the mental figure. And that means to translate them into an inferior kind of functioning other than the supreme workings native to the divine consciousness and its Shakti. The mind is spiritualized, purified, liberated, perfected within its own limits, may come, as near as possible, to a faithful mental translation. But we shall find that this is, after all, a relative fidelity and an imperfect perfection. The mind, by its very nature, cannot render with an entirely rightness or act in the unified completeness of the divine knowledge, will, and Ananda, because it is an instrument for dealing with the divisions of the finite on the basis of division. A secondary instrument, therefore, and a sort of delegate for the lower movement in which we live. The mind can reflect the infinite. It can dissolve itself into it, can live in it by a large passivity. It can take its suggestions and act them out in its own way, a way always fragmentary, derivative, and subject to a greater or less deformation. But it cannot be itself the direct and perfect instrument of the infinite spirit acting in its own knowledge. The divine will and wisdom organizing the action of the infinite consciousness and determining all things according to the truth of the spirit and the law of its manifestation is not mental, but supramental, and even in its formulation nearest to mind, as much above the mental consciousness in its light and power as the mental consciousness of man above the vital mind of the lower creation. The question is how far the perfected human being can raise himself above mind, enter into some kind of fusing union with the supramental, and build up in himself a level of supermind, a developed gnosis by the form and power of which the divine Shakti can directly act, not through a mental translation, but organically in her supramental nature. It is here necessary in a matter so remote from the ordinary lines of our thought and experience to state first what is the universal gnosis or divine supermind, how it is represented in the actual movement of the universe, and what are its relations to the present psychology of the human being. It will then be evident that though the supermind is suprarational to our intelligence and its workings occult to our apprehension, it is nothing irrationally mystic, but rather its existence and emergence is a local necessity of the nature of existence, always provided we grant that not matter or mind alone, but spirit is the fundamental reality, and everywhere a universal presence. All things are a manifestation of the infinite spirit out of its own being, out of its own consciousness, and by the self-realizing, self-determining, self-fulfilling power of that consciousness. The infinite, we may say, organizes by the power of its self-knowledge the law of its own manifestation of being in the universe. Not only the material universe present to our senses, but whatever lies behind it on whatever planes of existence. All is organized by it, not under any inconscient compulsion, not according to a mental fantasy or caprice, but in its own infinite spiritual freedom according to the self-truth of its being, its infinite potentialities, and its will of self-creation out of those potentialities. And the law of this self-truth is the necessity that compels created things to act and evolve, each according to its own nature. The intelligence, to give it an inadequate name, the logos that thus organizes its own manifestation, is evidently something infinitely greater, more extended in knowledge, compelling in self-power, large both in the delight of its self-existence and the delight of its active being and works than the mental intelligence, which is to us the highest realized degree and expression of consciousness. It is to this intelligence infinite in itself, but freely organizing and self-determiningly organic in its self-creation and its works, that we may give for our present purpose the name of the divine supermind or gnosis. The fundamental nature of this supermind is that all its knowledge is originally a knowledge by identity and oneness. And even when it makes numberless apparent divisions and discriminating modifications in itself, still, all the knowledge that operates in its workings, even in these divisions, is founded upon and sustained and lit and guided by this perfect knowledge by identity and oneness. The Spirit is one everywhere, and it knows all things as itself and in itself, so sees them always and therefore knows them intimately, completely in their reality as well as their appearance, in their truth, their law, the entire spirit and sense and figure of their nature and their workings. When it sees anything as an object of knowledge, it yet sees it as itself and in itself, and not as a thing other than or divided from it, about which therefore it would at first be ignorant of the nature, constitution, and workings, and have to learn about them. As the mind is at first ignorant of its object and has to learn about it, because the mind is separated from its object and regards and senses and meets it as something other than itself and external to its own being. The mental awareness we have of our own subjective existence and its movements, though it may point to, is not the same thing as this identity and self-knowledge, because what it sees are mental figures of our being and not the inmost or the whole, and it is only a partial, derivative, and superficial action of ourself that appears to us, while the largest and most secretly determining parts of our own existence are occult to our mentality. The supramental spirit has, unlike the mental being, the real, because the inmost and total knowledge of itself and of all its universe and of all things that are its creations and self-figurings in the universe. This is the second character of the Supreme Supermind, that its knowledge is a real, because a total knowledge. It has, in the first place, a transcendental vision, and sees the universe not only in the universal terms, but in its right relation to the supreme and eternal reality from which it proceeds, and of which it is an expression. It knows the spirit and truth and whole sense of the universal expression because it knows all the essentiality and the infinite reality, and all the consequent constant potentiality of that which in part it expresses. It knows rightly the relative, because it knows the absolute, and all its absolutes to which the relatives refer back, and of which they are the partial or modified or suppressed figures. It is, in the second place, universal, and sees all that is individual in the terms of the universal, as well as in its own individual terms, and holds all these individual figures in their right and complete relation to the universe. It is, in the third place, separately with regard to individual things, totally in its view, because it knows each in its inmost essence of which all else is the resultant, in its totality, which is its complete figure, and in its parts and their connections and dependences, as well as in its connections with and its dependences upon other things, and its nexus with the total implications and the explicits of the universe. Pausing, bottom of page 787.